Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast, teaching business owners the not-so-secret techniques that took famous businesses from mom-and-pop to major brands. Stephen Semple is a marketing consultant, story collector, and storyteller. I'm Stephen's sidekick and business partner, Dave Young. Before we get into today's episode, a word from our sponsor, which is, well, it's us. But we're highlighting ads we've written and produced for our clients. So here's one of those.
My name is Travis Crawford. How many times have you heard a company advertise by saying, "We're the ones that you can trust"? Being trustworthy isn't an advertising slogan, and you don't get that reputation by just telling people that you are. That's why we do everything we can to earn your trust and not just tell you what you should think. We post the prices of major components like furnaces, water heaters, and air conditioners right on our website so you can see what your options are and make an educated decision. And when we finish a project in your home, we attach the Travis Crawford Certified Seal, signed by the technician who did the job, and signed again by me. It means we take responsibility for the quality of our work, and that I'm willing to stake my name on it. Right now, those are just things we told you about on the radio. We haven't earned your trust yet, but I hope they're reason enough that you might give us a chance to. Travis Crawford, HVAC.com.
Told you, Brian.
Totally what?
This is part two of last week's episode.
Oh, yeah, and it was getting good.
And if you missed it, you can always listen to the first one. Just back up to last week's episode. Take it away, fellas.
In my TEDx talk that I did, the very, very first slide, is win the heart and the mind will follow.
That's exactly right. We're humans. We're emotion-led. That's exactly right.
Even engineers make decisions emotionally. We are wired to make decisions emotionally and connect with things emotionally. So you're 1,000% correct on this.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, so far so good. So ultimately the market will decide if that's true or not, but I tend to believe that that is true.
It's already voted that way with you so far.
Yeah. I mean, it's coming that way. And so we really focus our brand on making the client feel like the hero because they are. Like, buying flowers from us should feel as good as receiving the flowers. It is a remarkable act to send flowers to somebody. You are literally creating a more loving world.
Yes.
And I don't know what the meaning of life is, okay? But when I ask people, a lot of times the response is it's human connection, or if they want to go even deeper, the meaning of life is love. And so that's the business we're in. We feel, and if you're leveraging flowers, the most meaningful gift you can give to tell somebody that you love them, you should be praised for that. And so we make our centers feel very good about that, as they should be.
Well, if you think about it, your business is very, very similar. Let's just look at the emotional part. Your business is very similar on the emotional level as engagement rings. The person who gives an engagement ring, yes, they want the person that they're giving the ring to feel good, but it's that I give this beautiful ring to this person, they feel good, I feel good in return. So you're absolutely right. The gift of giving, when it's done right, both end up getting positive emotional feelings about it. The receiver feels great. And when it's done right, the giver feels great as well. Here's the other thing that people discount in gift giving. It now actually creates a shared narrative.
That's right.
Because we've actually shared in that gift. Even if it's thousands of miles away, even if I never talk to the person, even if the person's in a coma and it goes to the hospital, I still have a shared experience now with that individual through emotionally taking that act. You're absolutely 1,000% correct on these things.
Yeah, thanks. It bothers me because we would not be doing what we're doing if somebody else was. We never had the ambition. So I want to answer your question on why franchise. We wouldn't franchise. We wouldn't even expand corporate locations if there was somebody in our industry that was doing it as well as we thought it should be done. But nobody is. Our market leader is 1-800-Flowers, and I'm not. My job is not to bash the competitors. We shine our own lamp. But pragmatically speaking, we think somebody can do a better job than 1-800. Okay.
Yeah. For them, it's a commodity that's being moved. I want to share a thought with you, and you may have considered this thought, but you're in an interesting situation because as soon as I hear somebody say, "Hey, we want to educate the consumer on doing this thing, and I want to change the consumer behavior," I always look at that from a marketing perspective as being a really
very expensive.
Well, it's expensive and it's a difficult challenge. However, you've got an interesting strategy that you can do. So if I was working with you based upon, you know, a 20-minute conversation, so like this strategy is worth the amount of time and effort and money that's been put towards it.
I don't know. you've been doing this for however many years to get to this answer. So
right. But if you think about it, there is a bit of a thin edge of the wedge strategy here, especially where you've optimized and worked hard to make sure the customer becomes a repeat customer. So anytime I'm in a situation where I go, I've got a good long-term value of this customer and I've got good stickiness and I've got good return and I've got to educate them on a behavior that they're not doing today, I can do a kind of interesting thin edge of the wedge type approach. So in other words, okay, my acquisition strategy is not give a gift you've never thought about giving. My acquisition strategy is lean into the gift you're already giving, but then make it so amazing and make it so incredible. And now that I've got a relationship with you, I can start to talk to you about gifting in other ways. It's almost like that. I can use the one to acquire and then I can pivot that customer into a different relationship now that they're a customer.
Totally.
Is that kind of the strategy you're kind of employing?
It is. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that is, I'll add on to that because I agree. And to add an additional perspective there as well, because I agree with you. On the surface, it looks like we're trying to shift consumer behavior to purchase flowers more frequently and purchase for non-occasions, right? If our culture right now is to buy for a happy birthday and we're trying to say no, buy for a random Tuesday.
Yeah.
That is a difficult thing to do. What we're trying to do instead is a little bit more like inspire, educate, motivate.
Yeah.
The buyer into, and it's not educating them on something new. It's something they already know very deep down. Giving flowers is an incredibly, goes back to our ancestors. I mean, it's been around for thousands of years, that act of giving flowers. Yeah, it's in us.
It's not a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We view our job as reminding people of that.
Yes.
And so it's not necessarily shifting. It's resurfacing something that people already know very deep down, I think. And maybe not deep down. Maybe people already really do know that.
Yeah, it's rekindling that. But the interesting place is the easiest place to rekindle that is with the customer who's already had the great experience.
Yes, exactly.
With
yes.
you.
Yes.
Because they've also now experienced how wonderful it is and how superior your product is and how great the experience was. Is that, okay, well, now I want to do that again. And you're able to communicate them about, well, you don't necessarily, you don't need an occasion to make somebody feel good.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
It is that. But the interesting thing with that is that type of messaging, is a different type of aspirational messaging. And as you were saying, is expensive. Look, it doesn't fit into where the traditional florist marketing is, which is web-based pay-per-click style advertising.
Perfect.
Because what you're speaking to is doing something that a person isn't searching for, but kindling that idea.
That's right. That's exactly right.
There's lots of really cool ways that you can do it. Look, and this is also how a lot of luxury, like, and I know you're not a luxury good, but you are a luxury good. It's a lot of how those goods are sold, because they're sold around an aspirational, emotional idea.
So I agree with you. I think that the perception is that we're a luxury company. I challenge the floral industry. I challenge the franchise industry. I think most franchises suck. Can I say that? Most franchises
Absolutely.
Suck.
Sure.
There are a couple of good franchise systems out there. I think Chick-fil-A does it okay. I think Orange Theory does it okay. So like we're following a model. Like when we say we're franchising, we don't have to get into it. Just know we're trying to flip the franchise model on its head and actually run a great franchise system that puts the franchise owner first, and even more than the franchise owner first, puts the end consumer first, right?
Right.
That's one thing. So we flipped the floral industry on its head. We flipped the franchise model on its head. And now from the consumer perspective, what does a luxury company mean? We need to design some apparel for our team members to wear. So some really good, to make them, apparel that's high quality, make them feel really good, really special.
Yeah.
I went to Rodeo Drive to get some inspiration. Look at Louis Vuitton and Hermes and all these companies, right?
Thank you.
Okay. This is what I found. Remarkable craftsmanship, I will say.
Yep.
An unbelievable amount of thought goes into those designs. Then you look at the price tag and it's $4,000 for a cotton t-shirt.
Yes.
My mind is like, is there a way? And this is a very difficult thing to do, but this is our current challenge where we continue to push the brand we have and we continue to. Can we create an experience that feels like a $4,000 experience, but we can charge $40 for it? If somebody can't take their whole entire paycheck and buy flowers, they can only walk in and pay $20 for a bouquet. Can we make them feel like they just had a $4,000 experience for $20? So we want to provide the luxury experience, and we do.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to call it approachable luxury. I don't like that. I don't like the word approachable. I don't like the word luxury. So like, I don't.
I would say don't even put a name. You almost don't even need to put a name to it.
It's just a different category.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. We're going to wrap up this story and tell you how to apply this lesson to your business right after this.
What message? No, what is the message? how
media.
What?
Not what, but how. How is media?
Which is first?
Message. What you have to say is first.
But I thought how was first.
No, media is second. How the message is delivered is less important than what you have to say, your message.
So the message is key?
Yes. Oh, and you can book your free starter session on this podcast website.
Back to you, Dave. Dave. Dave.
Let's pick up our story where we left off, and trust me, you haven't missed a thing.
So there's one thing I want to really commend you on. I want people to really lock in that I loved.
Thanks.
You went looking for a different way to do it, and you didn't go to flower stores. You went, I want this to be luxurious, so I went to luxury stores. I'm always saying to people, if you want to learn how to do better window displays, go to Vegas and wander the stores in frickin' Vegas. No one does it better. Like, nowhere is it done better. Now, it's not that you need to be the Vegas experience, but if you want to get ideas, you can get them all in like 2 days just wandering through the casinos looking at the retail stores. Like, they're amazing. Now, somebody who's taken the idea of applying the feeling of luxury to an everyday product, who's still now been able to do a premium price point, these folks right here, Florette's Farm.
Amazing.
Now, look at that book.
Wow.
Right? And the photography in this book is amazing, and their story is incredible. And look, you go to buy their, and they sell seeds. They don't even sell flowers. They sell seeds. And you go to buy their seeds, and if you don't buy them early enough in the spring, by summer, they're sold out. Again, they're not selling seeds at thousands of dollars, but they're still selling them at probably 4 to 5 times the price that you would get normal seeds at.
Wow.
I can't remember which streaming channel, but they've now even got a streaming series about her story and everything. But if you take a look at it, they have figured out how to take seeds and put a luxury feel to it. And again, for it to be luxury, it will never feel luxury to somebody if it's not a premium price, but a premium price to other flowers. Doesn't mean it needs to be $4,000, but it can't be cheap. It can't be the price of the flowers that I get at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Because then I won't believe it's luxury. There's three types of pricing in economics. You got elastic goods, which price affects volume. You've got inelastic goods, which price does not affect volume. And then you've got, oh, I always forget the name of the third one, but it is literally one that if you raise the price, you actually raise demand on it.
Right. Oh, I know that concept too. God, this is like econ.
Oh, and it's an economist who came up with the whole idea, and he's the economist who invented the conspicuous consumption. I even did a podcast on it. I cannot.
Oh, that's awesome. Somebody's listening is probably screaming answer.
Oh my God. Yeah. If you know what, I'll think of it. I'll email it to you and I'll add at the end of this. That's the term for this, but that's the economic place that you're playing in, and fantastic for you recognizing it. Here's the other thing I'm going to say fantastic for you to do. Anytime in the early days, it's really easy to succumb to these aggregators, Angie's List and Teleflora. So, oh, this is great. I don't have to market any longer. This is fantastic. They take that over. They just bring me customers. Isn't that wonderful? It is the road that is paved to hell. It is the road that is paved to hell.
It is.
Because then what ends up happening is you stop marketing, your margins are low enough that you can't market, and now you're beholden to them, and they own your ass in that moment. So I am always have the relationship directly with that consumer and guard that relationship and nourish that relationship, and you now control your destiny. So really, really well done. We've been talking for, 40 minutes or so. If you're wanting to give just a couple of messages to people who are entrepreneurs in terms of this journey you've been on, what additional insight would you like to share with us?
Yeah. The one thing that I'll say is, sometimes you got to go through things the hard way, and like, you could listen to a bunch of advice, and I think it's good to, I listen to a ton of advice still to this day. I have two like business coaches that I work with that the best athletes in the world have a coach. Why wouldn't I? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm always trying to learn, and honestly, that's where my fulfillment comes from. But, I'll give you advice, but take it, take whatever resonates and leave the rest. For me, my advice would be to surround yourself with really smart people and lean into them. The problem with that though, is in the early days, I didn't have the privilege of doing that because except like I could watch YouTube videos, and YouTube videos was my way of doing that actually.
Right.
But I couldn't afford a business coach. I couldn't afford even a good manager. Like, I was the manager, right? So I had to build my way to that. But I think that as soon as you can afford to do that, it's that's been the highest leverage point for me and for our company, is to surround ourselves in the company with people who are extraordinarily talented at what they do, and operate from the same vision, or can buy into the vision, but operate by the same values and principles that the organization, or that you want the organization to operate by, right? And I think really smart people that share the same principles, that's a that, you know, you can get really far just with that. I do want to answer why franchise, and I'll do it in one sentence, way more or less. The reason we want to franchise follows that advice, where we own a bunch of corporate locations and we run them, and we think we run them well. But now we are one owner in the ecosystem. When we bring another franchise owner on, we vet our franchise owners like crazy. If we hire the wrong person, we could fire them. Okay, pragmatically speaking, we can turn around that mistake. When we bring on a franchise owner, it's a 10-year commitment, and often that commitment, way more often than not, gets renewed for another 10 years. And it's longer than most marriages last. So you better believe we screen our franchise candidates. That's our number one job at this point, okay? But we're bringing on another owner into our ecosystem, and now we're creating a community of floral shop owners that have the same standards for the consumer marketplace, that buy into our vision and what we think is possible, that operate by the same values and principles, and that we can put our collective minds together and create this like meritocratic system, this governance structure even, where the best ideas bubble to the top. And as an ecosystem of French florist, we get to execute the best ideas. So while we, you know, I wouldn't describe ourselves as humble necessarily, but we're humble enough to say we don't always come up with the greatest ideas. They do come from very unsuspecting places sometimes. And I think other franchise owners will bring that to our ecosystem. And we're franchising for no other reason than we think that's going to ultimately provide a better client experience, because we're going to get more ideas to the table of people who actually care. Like, we could pay a manager $150,000 to run our store, or we can have the owner run that store. And I think the owner, that maybe 1% difference of that additional commitment and additional dedication, they're going to care about contributing ideas to the organization that little amount more. And that 1%, it makes all the difference to us.
Interesting.
That's why franchise. And it follows the advice of like, surround yourself with smart people. Like, our franchise owners are very, very smart people. So we're really excited to be doing it the way that we are.
Yeah. And in those things of slightly different perspectives and experience and all of those things is amazing. I have one last question for you. When you've gone about finding the experts that you wanted to surround yourself with, when all of a sudden you had the financial ability to do it, how did you do the selection? Because one of the things I find is it's really easy to sit there and say, hire good people. And it's really easy to say, go find experts. How did you determine it was the right expert for you to work with?
Whew. Through a lot of mistakes. I wish I knew right away. Sometimes you find what you like through what you don't like, right? That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
So put my philosophy around it. My philosophy has evolved, but at the time, we still have, at the core of who we are, I think we are still this way. We like to move fast. We like to break things. Our philosophy is, if it breaks, we can fix it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, if you plan and if you think about it too much, you could be thinking for a long time, and you probably could have done the thing, did it wrong, fixed it, did it right quicker than if you just thought about it for a very long time and maybe got it right the first time. Maybe I'd probably not even get it for the first time too. But so when hiring people, we did make a lot of mistakes. We hired people too quickly. We had our rose colored glasses on, but through time, what I learned was, again, understand your values and principles. Like, our organizational values, a lot of the times I see organizational values, they're just, you know, words on a wall, and they don't mean anything other than a check the box type of exercise.
Yeah.
Our core values are not that. We live and breathe by them. We promote, we hire, we fire, we coach by those principles. We evaluate quarterly how well people are following those values. Our values spell out love, L-O-V-E. L is love what you do. I love what I do. It gets me through the hard times. It's a really important thing. Okay. O is own your impact. No matter how big or small the job is, as a matter of fact, the small, quote unquote, small jobs, like a delivery driver, they're the only person in the organization that our recipient interacts with. To that recipient, that one driver represents the entirety of the company. So they don't represent the company. They are the company.
Right.
So own that. Right. So that's O. V is value connection. We're in the business of human connection, and we need to value connection between inter-team and between our customers and clients, value the connection that our client has with their sender and the recipient. And then E is exceeding expectations. And that's an important one for us too. If you're going to deliver a piece of work, it needs to be a 10 out of 10. But hold on, before you deliver that work, stop and say, what's the one thing that I can add to this 10 out of 10 piece that pushes it over the edge to be an 11 out of 10?
Right.
Almost, it's leveraging kind of like the unreasonable hospitality framework.
Yeah.
where it you almost deliver something to an unreasonable degree. So our expectations on our internal team are very high. We've had a lot of people that have decided to leave the company for it. And the one thing that I refuse to do is lower my standards. But we found people that, guess what? They align with that value and they only want to work with people that have very high expectations. And we've been able to recruit a great team for that. So
that's
like,
awesome.
Understand the principles that you really value and just like ruthlessly hire with those principles in mind.
And then I would take it when you're looking at experts to bring in that they meet those same things. And we have a term that we use around here around that exceeding expectations. You might like this framing because, again, everybody talks about exceeding expectations and people don't necessarily get it. We like to talk about it as being surprise and delight.
That's exactly the extra
little thing that you can do that will give the person that is unexpected, so therefore it's surprise, and will delight them just even if it's just a little tiny bit. A little bit of surprise and delight is always really nice. The moment it's expected, it's no longer surprise and delight.
That's right.
Try that out and see how that resonates with people because exceeding expectations seems so big. A little surprise and delight is small. Yeah. And really, and what you're saying is it can be the little tiny thing.
Yes, exactly.
A little tiny unexpected that the person's like, oh, that was so nice.
You're right. I have gotten the feedback too, where it's like, this is big, ambitious thing. They don't want to deliver work because they don't feel it's an 11 out of 10. So it never gets delivered, period. So you're exactly right. And so a lot of the times that phrasing of it does make it seem like a huge challenge. It's not a huge challenge. Look at it on a very micro level, right? As a matter of fact, more often than not, it's just a tiny little thing that just makes the difference. Exactly.
Try that out and let me know how that works because that'll be interesting to see how that registers with people. It's just like, look, we just want a little surprise and delight for the person, a little thing where they look and go, oh, that was nice.
Yeah. Awesome, Stephen. Good. Well, that was fun. Incredible.
This has been a fantastic interview and I'm really looking forward to getting it out there. The thing that I love about this is that these lessons that we talked about, they can be applied to really, really any business. And as we've all learned often the best ideas and the best inspirations come from businesses outside of your business. You experience it yourself by going, saying, hey, I want to do this luxury thing. I'm going to go to luxury stores and see how they do it. And yeah, I'm not going to do it exactly that way, but that's where you went to get the inspiration.
Okay.
This has been awesome. And thank you very much for spending this time with us.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you. Go buy some cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's Thursday.
Because it's Thursday. Exactly.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please share us, subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and leave us a big, fat, juicy 5-star rating and review at Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like to schedule your own 90-minute empire-building session, you can do it at empirebuildingprogram.com.